is first up. Every morning, come and hang on first up. The only show that brings the bang. It's first up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
Third hour of First Up here on TSN 1050, live on your radio, live streaming, podcasting, and on demand through the iHeartRadio Canada app. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. Coco, I know your lower back still a little bit pained after your shoveling exhibition yesterday. Man, those triceps must just be popping right now. You are.
They actually are, man. They actually
what
are my shoulders.
Yeah, your shoulders. Like, what would you say the primary source of your pain is after your hours of shoveling yesterday?
Lower back.
That's how it always lower is, back. Right? You're kind of like bending over and
well, I'm sure. The lifting, right?
Man, if you're a chiropractor this morning, you are loving life. Probably the appointments just pouring in.
Right.
Physiotherapists, chiropractors, they see the snowfall. They're like, yes, let's make some money here because there's a lot of people around our city who are feeling the exact same way you are with their back and everything just in complete and utter disarray. And that's what you get when you shovel for hours on end. And I talked to a couple of my buddies last night who have homes much like yourself and have to shovel their driveways. Not exactly the best feeling. I mean, there's certainly a feeling of accomplishment when it's all over, but when it's actually happening, and maybe when you wake up the next day, you're like, oh my God, what happened?
And, you know, I've always had this chat with friends during the winter seasons about a snowblower and, you know, my wish to get one, but, you know, we had any big snowfalls, and I told you I have a really small driveway, so. You know, do I really need a snowblower? Well, yesterday, let's just say when I opened up my garage and I saw 3 feet of snow up against it, the first text message was to my buddy Rob and says, so about that snowblower, because I think it's time to actually have one, you know,
I think
prepare
it's a good
yourself
investment.
For. And you know what? Like if I had a snowblower, I would have been out there all afternoon helping my neighbors out. You know, doing the sidewalks and you know, making sure people have, you know, the path to walk if they want to go for a walk in the nice weather. But, you know, as I went out during the night, people did their due diligence and people did their own responsibilities and did what they were supposed to do with their own sidewalks in front of their houses. And I actually shoveled the sidewalk on my neighbor's house because I noticed they didn't do it. I'm like, okay, well, they didn't get a chance to do it. I'll be the nice guy here. I'm doing it. And, you know,
class.
It's a nice thing. Those nice gestures come back in nice ways later on sometime.
Maybe a Bills win will be a result of your kind gesture to your neighbor. I think that's very possible.
Yep.
You put good karma out there, Coco, it comes back your way.
Exactly. Exactly. Put it out into the universe,
well,
right?
For sure. And we were talking about Timo Meier, who scored 5 goals last night. The San Jose Sharks beat the Kings 6-2. Meier becomes the 5th player in the last 25 years to score 5 goals in an NHL game. Mika Zibanejad, Johan Franzen, Patrick Laine, Marian Gaborik, and now Timo Meier. You mentioned you've been a part of many games with guys scoring 4 goals. What do you remember about the craziest offensive explosion you've seen in your time, your 14 years in the NHL? You played defense for a long time against a number of quality players over your years. Was there ever a night you were going up against a guy who was just dialed in and could not miss?
Dude, I've shared this story, I think, with you or many other people a bunch of times. When I played in the minors, okay, I played for St. John's Maple Leafs. We played in a division with the Rochester Americans. Thomas Vanek, I'm not even kidding. We played them probably 8 to 10 times a year. Every game we played them, he scored minimum 2 goals. Minimum. And I remember a couple times he had a couple of 4-goal nights, a couple of 5-goal nights. Like, that's how good he was in the minors. And when you're on the wrong end of that, you're just thinking to yourself, okay, what do I got to do to stop this guy? But he's not that guy that will break you with or that will wow you with his incredible skill level or his incredible speed. He had a knack of just being around the net and the puck finding him in open spots. And obviously that translated into the NHL. You saw the success he had early on in his career with Buffalo, where he was a goal scorer. In St. Louis one year, I believe TJ Oshie and David Perron had a five-goal game. Or sorry, a four-goal game. The funny thing was, I try to remember who it was, but we started a season. It was like the second or third game in. And it had to have been in St. Louis. And I believe it was Andy McDonald.
Oh,
I have to go back and look. But somebody had a four-goal game, like two or three games in the season. And when guys have those games, they're thinking, like, wow, this is going to be a big year. I think you finished the season with like 12 goals or something.
Of course,
like that
always happens. Right? That always happens.
So, yeah, and correct me. I don't want to quote myself on this. I'm just trying to go by memory here. I don't really know if I've nailed the name and stuff like that. But, you know, four-goal games are common. You know, because when guys get a hat trick, they normally get that fourth one. But five-goal games, man, whew, those are – I don't think I've ever seen a five-goal game. Maybe with Thomas Vanek in the minors. I have to go back and look, but definitely not at the NHL level.
Well, it's a good thing Timo Meier didn't embrace the Joe Thornton mentality. I think he was talking about four-goal games and what he would do if he scored one after Thomas Hertl. I think it was – would that have been the game where Thomas Hertl ended Martin Biron's career?
Career, yeah. Between the legs.
That's what Thornton said afterwards, how he would, you know, be a little bit excited. Let's put it that way. This is a family show. If he were to score four goals, and 20 Fingers shaking his head at me because he knows exactly what I'm referring to. if you don't know what I'm referring to, you can Google Joe Thornton four goals and you'll find out very quickly. Uh-huh. But Timo Meier, I mean, having a hell of a year, 45 points in 35 games. He's got 20 goals in 35 games, and he and Thomas Hertl, who has been with the Sharks for a long time now. I mean, it's crazy to think about him being a pending UFA, and he's going to get a fat payday, whether it's from San Jose or from the team that he's traded to. But you talk about an impactful. We talked about John Klingberg with Chris Johnston, our Hockey Insider, about 15 minutes ago. I mean, if you can go out there and acquire Thomas Hertl, I mean, he's been an absolute stud this year for San Jose. And listen, that duo is doing very well. San Jose is currently in a playoff spot. Nobody expected that.
Right.
I mean, congratulations to them. I mean, I think it's still early. I don't really believe in them as a legit contender, especially all the teams that are behind them in the West. But, yeah. I mean, hell of a start for San Jose, a team that no one expected to play the way they're playing right now.
Right, and I think one of the greatest performances I've seen, not like live in the game that I was in, but during my career, was the performance of Sam Gagne that he had as a member of the Edmonton Oilers when they scored 8 goals and he had 8 points. I think that was after the second period, too, because he had the whole third period to try to break the single-game record. He had 4 goals and 4 assists in an 8-4 win over Chicago. And he only finished his season with 47 points that year. So, yeah, look, it happens. There's those nights where guys just feel it. You know, it just when something hits your stick, something good happens from it. And for Timo Meier last night, it was definitely his night.
Jimmy Butler was feeling it last night for the Miami Heat, picking up a triple-double for them as they beat the Toronto Raptors by 5. And I'm sure that almost everybody who lives in Toronto knows somebody that was at that Raptors Heat game last night. Like if you were down in South Florida, you probably went to the game. Or maybe not probably, but I know a lot of people who were at that game last night, and it was like a playoff vibe for sure. We'll get into the game on the other side. We'll tell you the very tight rotation that Nick Nurse is employing these days with guys like Gary Trent and Kem Birch on the sidelines with injury. And Pascal Siakam, man, he is dishing out the dimes at an unprecedented rate. Go ahead.
I'm just seeing this right now that Matt Sundin had 4 goals and 2 assists in a game against the Florida Panthers at the ACC in 2006. I'm curious if I played in that game. So
we'll get
I'll
our
find
research
out during the break
on that. So we'll talk about that on the other side, and we'll look back on a great game for the Toronto Raptors. Again, some very stiff competition in Miami, but a very complete performance in spite of the loss. This is First Up. You're listening to us here on TSN 1050. And again, make sure you download the iHeartRadio Canada app. Tough loss for the Toronto Raptors last night. And listen, they've been playing some really good teams of late. They played Phoenix last week, played them tough right down to the buzzer. They played the Milwaukee Bucks on Saturday night, beating the Bucks on the second half of a back-to-back. And last night, they go down to South Beach. They're without Gary Trent Jr., without Kem Birch, and they play Miami down to the buzzer again. A very impressive performance. Welcome back to First Up. You're listening to TSN 1050. I'm Aaron Korolnik. He's Carlo Koliakovo. Carlo, one of my favorite guests whenever we're able to get him on the show is Robin Lundberg, you know, from Sports Illustrated. Formerly, he was the lead-in to our show in the morning on ESPN Radio with Mike Gold Jr., another one of our friends. And Robin, kind enough to take some time this morning to join us. What's up, Robin? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing good,
amazing.
Man. We're doing good. And we're
snowy
we're
Toronto
snowed in here. Very snowy. What's going on in New York with regards to the accumulation of snow?
Well, you know, it snowed yesterday, right? And then it started to, like, slush. And, you know, I live in a house now. I'm a homeowner now after apartment living my entire life. So I'm still trying to get used to, you know, the personal upkeep. And when the slush started, it started to wash away the snow. So I paid no mind. And then I go out last night and I realize our entire driveway is completely iced over. So now I have to hope for a little bit of sun and just over 32 degrees or some sort of mixture of that so I can get the ice off our driveway. That's where I am. It didn't even snow that much.
Get this man some salt. You got to melt that ice away as soon as possible. It's going to be dangerous, very slippery. We got to keep you upright, and certainly your family as well. So we've talked so much about the Raptors this morning and kind of giving really good teams, title contender teams, great runs. I mentioned Phoenix and Milwaukee, and certainly last night in Miami. I think you have to look at the process versus the results when you're a team like Toronto. While you're not necessarily winning all of these games, Robin, you're at least hanging with the big boys. And I think that says a lot about this team in its current form and about its future. How do you view it?
Well, I mean, I think that's an organizational thing too, right? Like, that, you know, the Raptors, when you go around and you canvass the league and you think of teams that, all right, you're comfortable in the way that they are run, the way they are operated, the Raptors fall into that bucket. Obviously, from a ceiling level, their talent isn't quite there. But, you know, as a fan, you can't always – you guys won a championship a couple years ago. You can't ask for everything all the time, but what you can ask for is a representative product that you can feel proud to root for, you know, you can be invested in. And I think that's what Toronto's given them right now. So the fan base should feel good about that in that regard. I mean, this is the weird pocket of the NBA season before the All-Star break. You know, about halfway through the COVID stuff, so much stuff has happened. But it's a competitive league right now, especially the Eastern Conference, which I would say is now superior to the West. So, you know, thus far, I think if you're a Raptors fan, you have to be thrilled with the state of the current team. While, you know, you're probably spending a lot of your time, and I'd imagine a lot of minutes, maybe hours on the radio, figuring out how you get to that next step.
Yeah, no, a lot to like about this Raptors team, including one of the best surprises in this season, and that's the emergence of Scottie Barnes. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about where he stands in the rookie conversation when it comes to Rookie of the Year. Where do you rank him right now when it comes to rookies and potential Rookie of the Year candidates?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's right at the top. Mobley is probably number one, I would imagine. Just because, you know, he's got a little bit of that freakish bounce to him. And the Cavaliers, I mean, talk about another team. You know, the Cavaliers who beat the Nets yesterday are maybe the surprise of the season. You know, there's surprises in the bad way, surprises in the good way. They might be the surprise overall considering how good they've been. But I think when you're listing off the top rookies this season, you can't go two or three names without getting to Barnes for sure.
Yeah, he's had a very impressive year, and the big question surrounding him heading into the season, is he going to be able to shoot? And he's shooting a lot, maybe, certainly actually a lot better than we all expected. Our guest is Robin Lundberg, you know him from Sports Illustrated, and you mentioned how the Cavs beat the Brooklyn Nets last night. Kevin Durant not in the lineup for Brooklyn. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. When you talk about Brooklyn and the Big Three, and I actually struggle to call them the Big Three because they're never playing on the court together. And like Harden's in and out of the lineup. We know that the situation with Kyrie and the vaccine only being able to play some games on the road, and now Durant is out. But Harden, his name came up yesterday in a report from Mark Stein of the New York Times saying it's a little bit potentially dicey for Brooklyn and Durant, and Harden, I should say, especially leading up into the offseason because he could test the options as far as free agency goes. And there are those who link him to his former general manager in Houston, Daryl Morey, who now runs the Philadelphia 76ers. And if you connect the dots, maybe Ben Simmons, James Harden. What do you make of the whole situation with Harden's future and Brooklyn?
Well, a couple things. One, you know, the situation couldn't have unfolded exactly the way he wanted or anybody wanted, because you're right. I mean, the Big Three, or whatever you want to call them, they've barely been on the court together. The Kyrie thing has to be frustrating to people who are committed to competing for a championship, and that's what their main goal is. You know, Kyrie's always saying stuff like it's bigger than basketball and whatnot. I don't really know what Kyrie's actual stance is. He hasn't articulated that. If his stance just might be, I don't want to do it, which I guess is fine. I don't care about his vaccination status other than how it impacts the team, and he could change that at any point, which is a point of frustration, I'm sure. At the same time, you know, the rules don't really make sense because visiting players can play in New York. Kyrie couldn't have attended the game in Chicago, but he was allowed to play. So there's just a lot of holes in the logic. But from Harden's perspective, I think there's two things. One, he hasn't been quite as good as he was last year since he got to Brooklyn either. So there's a part of that where, you know, he needs to play at a little bit of a higher level. Too many turnovers. Too many lapses defensively. You know, his shooting and finishing hasn't quite been up to par. On the second side of that is this link with Daryl Morey, which has been, I think I've seen this report 100 times about, you know, a sign and trade for Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. If the Nets were to lose Harden for nothing, that would be a disaster, given what they gave up to acquire him. I have no idea how real the rumblings are, but if there is a real desire for James Harden to play somewhere else, then they need their backup plan to make sure they're recouping assets if that happens. In the meantime, there's always a lot of noise around teams with stars like this, and the Nets have had a lot of noise around them. If they can get to the playoffs and be healthy, I still think they're the favorite. Now, Kyrie's situation has to be resolved by then. I don't know, you know, if there will be an athlete exemption. So that's a wild card. That's a question that the team's going to be asked all year, and maybe that's another point of frustration. You know, like, this is not what I signed up for, to be asked questions about whether Kyrie is vaccinated.
Well, you have your finger on the pulse of the NBA as much as anyone, Robin, and when Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, you know, the predominant insider, comes out and says that expectations are that Kyrie will be a full-time player by the end of the season, I've been trying to figure out how that's going to be the case. Like, is Brooklyn expecting New York to change its laws with regards to the mandate, which they should change, by the way? It's just an antiquated and really illogical law that they have still in place considering the current climate of the coronavirus in our world. But in any case, what do you think the rationale is with regards to Woj's report, and how can you see this coming to fruition?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably one of two things. Number one, and this has to be what Kyrie's hoping for, is that the Nets appeal to the city, the new mayor, and they try to figure out some sort of exemption. There's a precedent there, right? Like Boston, Philadelphia, there's other cities, I'm sure, too, that have an athlete exemption. They have a mandate, but they have an athlete exemption. There's also the fact Kyrie just had COVID, right? I mean, he just had COVID. So for those of us who say we believe in science, part of believing in science is there is a degree of natural immunity. We don't know exactly how long it lasts, but he's in a locker room of other, you know, a completely vaccinated team otherwise that COVID just ran through, right? So there's no, like you said, the rules are antiquated and outdated in the sense that they just don't make sense because of they don't have, they're not consistent and all that. So I think that would be plan A, is some sort of appeal that way. The problem is it's a bad look for them to make some one-time exemption for Kyrie, and it'll be noticed more because he's more famous, because he's sort of become the face of all this, even though he's not the only unvaccinated player in the NBA. I mean, the other option is at some point he does get vaccinated. I don't know. You know, he reiterated yesterday that he's made his decision and he's sticking by it. When you get to the playoffs, though, and you realize that's your only chance, you know, where does that, you know, affect his calculus? Does it affect his calculus? But I think plan A is probably lobbying to create some sort of exemption, some sort of change in the rules. And it is also still, well, we're still in January, right? Mm-hmm. So February, March, April, May, you know, you're looking at about 4 months. And if you were to tell me, you know, tell us all 4 months ago, Omicron wasn't a thing, right? four months ago. No, so we have no idea what the world is going to look like in 4 months.
No idea at all. Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated is our guest here on First Up. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. And let's move to the NFL. The game last night saw Arizona, a team that a lot of people were really high on, myself included, at the L.A. Rams. And, Robin, I can't remember a more pitiful offensive performance from a performer who I expected so much from in Kyler Murray, especially in the first half yesterday. In the first quarter, the Arizona Cardinals had -3 yards. Like, that is just a truly horrific offensive performance. Can we take anything from Arizona, considering just a couple of days ago we looked at Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts and we're doing a referendum on his status as the number one quarterback? Should they go out and get somebody else? He can't perform in the playoffs. And now Kyler Murray goes out and puts up a clunker of just epic magnitude. Well, what was your takeaway from what we saw from Arizona? And I guess we'll talk about the other side in the Rams as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to be concerned if you're a supporter of the Cardinals. And Kyler Murray looked like a guy who was on a top 10 quarterback trajectory. Mm. You know, his ability to improvise. And, you know, it's now 2 years in a row where he started the season really well. They started the season really well. And they've gone in the other direction as the season went on. He's been injured, but, you know, he's little. So that's part of he's little and he runs. So he's going to have to deal with that throughout his career. And you know, bad games happen. Everybody's had a bad game. But that is a concerning performance. There's no question.
No kidding.
I mean, you know, that's the kind of performance where you wonder if he's the guy. Now, I don't think you're rash. I don't think you make a drastic move. He's also without DeAndre Hopkins. You know, and sometimes we can over-focus on one game and one result. But yeah, sure as hell. I think you now, it's a legitimate question. Let's put it this way. It's a legitimate question whether Kyler Murray, you know, is capable of being the player that we thought he was going to be.
Maybe he'll go play baseball. You know, he's a top 10 pick for the Oakland A's. I mean, I'm sure maybe you think Billy Bean, he's still a GM of Oakland, right? He's like looking at that. Yeah. He's like, maybe Kyler, come on over. So, all right, go ahead.
Well, sticking with the football theme, we now have the divisional round set up. We've got San Fran going into Lambeau against the Green Bay Packers, Tom Brady hosting the L.A. Rams. Where are you siding on those two matchups?
Well, you know, in Wild Card weekend, and this worked out for me in real life too, I almost always side with the favorites. In fact, this is not recorded anywhere, so you're going to have to take my word for it. I got every game right.
Wow.
The only underdog I picked was San Francisco. Because in Wild Card weekend, you're generally separating the men from the boys a little bit, if you will. You know, we get hyped and whatever, but let's take the Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Eagles had no business even being in the playoffs. You know, they expanded the field. They're playing Tampa. It was guaranteed that the Buccaneers were going to beat them by more than a touchdown. When you get to the next round, now you start to see this come a lot closer. And I don't think you can just definitively make a pick with a bunch of confidence, but I'm going to stick with Tom Brady and the Bucks. You know, until proven otherwise,
yeah.
I think that's a safe pick.
Until somebody knocks him off.
Yeah. And then the Packers, too, because San Francisco, I don't know if they can bully Green Bay quite the way that they did Dallas, and I just think the quarterback advantage is so significant for the Packers versus the 49ers. I mean, it was a good win by the 49ers, but they also did almost everything they could to you know, piss that game away. at the end.
Let's turn our attention to the AFC. You mentioned the Philadelphia Eagles shouldn't have been there. I think the same could be said about the Pittsburgh Steelers because, man, they were embarrassing to watch. But with the four teams left remaining, I mean, most people predicted that KC and Buffalo would be the AFC championship game. They meet this week ahead of the AFC championship game. How do you handicap these two games?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I kind of like Cincinnati in that maybe I've been sleeping on Tennessee all year because I still am like, wait, Tennessee was the one seed? Tennessee had a bye?
Right. Right.
It doesn't feel so. Maybe I'm disrespecting them, but you know, I like with the way the Bengals played. I think the marquee matchup, though, is obviously Buffalo and Kansas City, and that's a coin flip. I mean, as well as Buffalo played, as well as Josh Allen played against New England, but the Chiefs, they've been there, done that. You know, Patrick Mahomes early in the season, I guess, struggled, but since that point in time, I mean, I think there's a pretty good argument. They've been the best team in the sport, and maybe it's the two best teams playing in that game. I mean, there's a chance, a very good chance, I think, the winner of that game wins the Super Bowl. I don't know if I've even decided who I think is going to win. I guess I'll go with Kansas City for the same reason I went with Tampa, but, I mean, that's a tough game to pick.
It's a Bills show, Robin. Come on. We're in Toronto. It's 2 hours away.
Guys are jumping off of vans through tables. Mm-hmm. I'll flip my pick. Who cares?
Exactly.
No one's going to play this tape back.
You're going to have another perfect weekend betting anyway.
Well, that's right.
Let's go Bills.
There we go.
Nice.
All right.
Love it.
At least plus the points in Kansas City. We'll take the 2.5 points and we'll go from there. He is Robin Lundberg. You can follow him on Twitter at Robin Lundberg. He's a senior host for Sports Illustrated. We always appreciate you taking time, my friend. And good luck with your home ownership and shoveling that driveway.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that sun gets it a little bit and I can strike at the opportune time.
There we go. All right. Thanks, man. We appreciate it. That's Robin Lundberg again from Sports Illustrated. And I guess this would have been before your time on this show, Coco, but certainly 20 Fingers and I would remember when Robin was hosting the show prior to us and we were driving in, listening to Robin and defending LeBron James against all the haters and doing such a good job with it. It's great to see he's had so much success. All right, just had an idea come to me. Let me ask you this. You know, maybe we'll pose it and we'll debate it on the other side. What's more likely to happen? Bill Belichick wins another Super Bowl or LeBron James wins another NBA title? Let it percolate. Think about it.
I can give you my answer right now.
I don't want the answer right now. I want it on the other side.
Okay.
I think I have an idea what your answer is, but I'm very curious. And we will find out that answer. And I'll give you mine as First Up rolls on. It's 8:41. You're listening to TSN 1050. The New England Patriots out of the postseason, Carlo, as your Buffalo Bills just dismantled them over the weekend. And there were some questions post-game to Belichick. Oh, you still want to coach? Yeah, he's coaching. He's going to be coaching for a while still, would be my guess. And then you have LeBron James on the other side. I would argue no coach, certainly in the NFL, has had as much success in the last 25 years, of course, and Bill Belichick, and no player in the NBA has had as much success as LeBron James. So my question to you, Belichick or LeBron, who's more likely to win a championship again? Who would your pick be?
This is an easy answer for me, and I would even give it my vote of 100% confidence, and that would be LeBron James.
Oh, really?
Okay. Because Bill Belichick, I love what Sal Capaccio said yesterday when he dissected Bill Belichick from 2000s to Bill Belichick 2022. Nobody will ever discredit how incredible of a coach he is when it comes to dissecting the game, putting together a game plan. But if you look at what he had success with in the past and the way football is operating now, I think most people will say, including Sal, would agree that he has failed to evolve with the way the game is changing. And you look at the quarterback position. Nowadays, you don't win unless you've got a star quarterback. And, I mean, I think it's still pretty premature to say that maybe Mac Jones can turn into that.
Very premature.
But look at the competition he's up against in the AFC. You've got Patrick Mahomes, you've got Josh Allen, you've got Justin Herbert, who is, you know, emerging. You've got Joe Burrow, You got Lamar Jackson. I mean, there's so many guys right now that are head above heels about anything that New England has to offer. And you know that the clock is running out on Bill Belichick because of his age. And I would say this confidently, saying that they're staring up at the Buffalo Bills as long as Josh Allen is still the quarterback of that team. And when you try to compare that to LeBron and what he can accomplish, if there's one thing we know about LeBron, is this guy has no, he's not shy about trading his teammates, and he's definitely not shy about putting himself in a position to win. So his contract is going to be up in 2 years. He's probably a guy that will probably try to live out the game like Tom Brady has done with the longevity of his career. And he'll put himself in a best position to chase rings, because he'll always want to be compared and at least catch up to the record that Jordan has for most NBA championships.
Yeah, so Belichick is 69 years old, and LeBron's in his 19th NBA season. It's actually really a testament to how unbelievable LeBron is still at this point in his career, that there would be a debate who's going to be in their respective sport longer, Belichick or Brady or LeBron, simply because, I mean, Belichick in theory could easily coach till 75. I mean, that's not unprecedented at all. Mm-hmm. But then you look at
if I'm Belichick right now, like, why wouldn't you just walk into a front office job?
Well, you know he is in a front office job.
Well, I mean, he's also at the front and center job of being the head coach on the field, on the practice field every day. Like, that's a grind for a 70-year-old man.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, it wasn't that long ago the Patriots won the Super Bowl. I mean, we're going back 4 years now in 2018 when they did win the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's not like Belichick has lost his fastball yet. Maybe you can make the argument as far as some of the decisions in the front office go, with regards to maybe some free agent signings, maybe some drafting, maybe not quite at the level he once was. But the thing about LeBron, and I think I'm with you, I would pick LeBron. It's also just a matter of LeBron's still so remarkably good that at the right situation arose. I'm not saying it could happen this year, but I mean, you get Anthony Davis back. We've already seen LeBron and Anthony Davis win a title like a couple of years ago. I mean, this was not something that would be completely unprecedented. And if they could figure out a way to get rid of Westbrook and bring in someone who could actually contribute in a positive way, and man, you go back to the offseason, if they were able to bring in that reported deal where they were deciding apparently between the Buddy Hield package and the Russell Westbrook package, they all opted for the Westbrook package. If they went the other way, man, this could look a lot different for the Lakers. And are they going to be able to make a seismic move before the trade deadline? I mean, it wouldn't shock me if they did. I think they should try to, because I don't see any way in which LeBron, Westbrook, and AD works and is able to compete with the Golden States and the Phoenixes and the top teams in the Western Conference. I just, to quote Al's brother, I just don't see it happening. And if that's the case, then you got to make some kind of effort to mix and shake things up. Otherwise, you're just wasting year 19 of LeBron. And listen, at some point, you know what? I'm not even going to say this, because Brady, I'm not going to bring up Father Time, because that's no longer true. Tom Brady has defeated Father Time. That's a fact.
Yes.
And I think you could argue so has LeBron. In his year 19 season, at age 36, he's been unbelievable this year. And I wouldn't expect anything to slow down at any point soon. So, yeah, I think I would take LeBron as well, but I wouldn't rule out Belichick, because Mac Jones, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar quarterback. It seems like a little bit of a stretch, considering I don't know if the arm talent and the abilities necessarily athletically are there, but I think he could be very, very good. Mm-hmm. And you pair that with a great defense and some more skill position players, maybe they could get back to a Super Bowl.
Well, look, I mean, going back to what Sal Capaccio said yesterday too, just the way Bill Belichick has continually built his roster, he has yet to ever understand and appreciate the importance of having a stud wide receiver. And if he can do that in New England and give Mac Jones some weapons at the wide receiver position, you know that the way he coaches defense, he'll find a way to keep that defense relevant. But it's the offense that's going to ultimately determine. I mean, granted, they had a good run game. And, you know, run game can only take you so far in this league, especially when you're going up against a team that has a quarterback that can just shred you to pieces like the Buffalo Bills did in their playoff game. And I think the other thing too is when you're talking about the Patriots, and Bill Belichick and his legacy, you know, we went on this rant yesterday about Bill Belichick, about, you know, Josh Allen being the kryptonite of Bill Belichick because he just feels like he's broken anything that Bill Belichick has thrown at him. Yes, I'm not taking away anything Bill Belichick has accomplished throughout his career, but until he proves he can win a playoff game or even go further and win a championship without Tom Brady, that discussion should never be what Bill Belichick can do or who he is, because everything he accomplished was because he had the greatest quarterback of all time playing under center for him. And who's to say when that time will come? Because, you know, like we mentioned, the clock is ticking on Belichick. Who knows, you know, where his mindset is about continuing to coach. He said the other day that he has no plans of retiring. So much can change in the offseason as you turn 70. But until Bill Belichick can actually win a playoff game, and to further that, win a championship, I don't think there's any debate here that a lot of what he accomplished was because he had Tom Brady. Because what did Tom Brady do? He went somewhere else in 1 year and did the unthinkable.
I know. You reflect back on last year with Tampa. It really is remarkable the way that everything kind of came together for them.
He went to a completely irrelevant franchise. Completely irrelevant franchise. And led them to a Super Bowl.
If New England called up Houston, Seattle, was like, hey, we'll give you Mac Jones and our first round pick, what do you think, though, the reaction would be? Like, do you think Mac Jones – let's bring a rod in.
Deshaun Watson?
He is our Patriots super fan. Do you think Belichick at age 69 – and listen, I think you put Deshaun Watson as quarterback of the New England Patriots.
They're a different team.
I think they're
– way more dangerous.
This is no slight on Mac Jones, who's a kid for his rookie season. And I think Mac Jones would be definitely let's say, if you're using equivalency of a first-round pick in this year's draft, let's call it the 15th pick. Mac Jones is definitely worth at least that, if not significantly more. So, Arod, you're the New England Patriots. You're the general manager right now. And the Houston Texans, all right, everything's cleared out with Deshaun Watson. All his legal stuff is gone. Are you trading Mac Jones and your first-round pick for Deshaun Watson this offseason?
Am I doing it? Yes, absolutely. If I'm the GM, if Arod's the GM of the New England Patriots, Arod does that deal. Now, I'm not in Bill Belichick's head. One thing about Belichick is, does he want to win now? He want to set up a successful franchise for people that are going to follow him, for his actual son, who's probably going to be the defensive coordinator once he's done, Steve Belichick, and for what many people say is, you know, the person that he treats like a son, Josh McDaniels, who by all means is going to be his heir apparent.
But you could do both, right? I mean, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Like, you could, like, Deshaun Watson's 26 years old. In theory, listen, this is just me spitballing here. I think Mac Jones could be a really good quarterback. I don't think you'll ever see Mac Jones at Deshaun Watson apex levels personally, and maybe I'll be proven wrong. But you wonder, maybe you sell high, and I think they love Mac Jones in there, as they should. Clearly, he's a good leader. He's very well respected in that locker room. But if you have the opportunity to upgrade, considering we know they have a top five defense, and they just got obliterated by Buffalo, so I don't really know what to make of that defense right now. We know they have a great run game, a great offensive line. I don't think Mac Jones held them back. I don't think that would be fair to say, but I don't know if he necessarily propels them forward in the way that one of those top-tier quarterbacks could.
I couldn't agree more, AK, with what you just said. The fact that he didn't hold them back, but he definitely didn't give them the best chance to win going up against some of these other quarterbacks, because he's not able to yet. And so this is where my point goes, where if that trade is something that they pursue, and I think if you're the New England Patriots and you're Bill Belichick, if you're actually thinking about removing yourself from that position in a year, in a 2 years, in a 3 years, well, what would you rather do? Put yourself in the best position to win while you're still coaching. And the way to do that is you go out and make an impact move like that, because bringing in a Russell Wilson or bringing in a Deshaun Watson gives you the best chance to win now. With the defense that you've assembled, with the running game that you have, you improve your quarterback position by 75-80%, because that's what you're doing by making that trade, you're giving yourself a way better chance to win in the playoffs and maybe compete for a Super Bowl championship.
Because wholeheartedly agree with everything you say. But to me, do you need to get a wide receiver first?
100%. But if you do that,
these guys in.
But if you go out and make that quarterback move, because you're bringing in experienced guys, those experienced guys are going to put the pressure on Belichick to go out and get that guy to play with them.
Here's what I would say to play devil's advocate. I'm sure there were very similar conversations happening in Buffalo after Josh Allen's rookie year. And they're like, is Josh Allen really the guy? Is he going to be able to do it for us? He was terrible. I mean, certainly compared to what he is now. But he was terrible his rookie year. Very inaccurate, made very poor decisions. Maybe
Buffalo was nowhere near the organization they were now, though.
No, I'm well aware, but I'm just talking about the quarterback specifically with Mac Jones and Josh Allen in their first year. Like, New England is feeling way better about Mac Jones now than Buffalo was feeling about Josh Allen after their rookie year, for sure. And I just wonder if we're underrating the ability for development for Mac Jones. And I think if I'm New England, I would trade Mac Jones in our first for Deshaun Watson all day long. Again, with the added caveat that Deshaun Watson's got a lot of stuff behind the scenes
that we
may or may not know about. And listen, it's not the cleanest transaction. That's pretty obvious. But from a pure talent perspective, I think it's a clear upgrade. But I think you could also look at the idea of Mac Jones being the controllable asset, a lot more inexpensive to Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson, whatever, for at least the next couple of years, and you keep your first, maybe there is some credence to that idea as well. What do you think, Rod?
I'm with you on that 100%. Look, the only thing that holds me back is Mac Jones is a single threat. He's not a dual threat that all the other modern QBs that we love, like a Josh Allen, like a Kyler Murray, like a Lamar Jackson, are. He's an old school, you know, sit in the pocket, pass the ball, get the ball out of your hand quickly type of guy. And that's the thing. Does Josh McDaniels get seduced by the idea of, hey, let's add that other dimension of a QB with legs to our offense?
Here's the difficulty that New England faces that really no other franchise experiences. Is they're probably one of the only organizations in football that has coach-driven power within the organization, okay? And you look at the way sports has changed, and you look at the way players have taken a stance with their own player empowerments. What type of player would want to, especially when we talk about those credentials, where players want more say in what happens in the organization? Would Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson want to walk into an organization like New England where basically they have no say on what on player personnel or roster decisions or game plan decisions? Because Bill Belichick is the guy that still runs the ship over there.
Yeah, he drops his 6 rings on the table. He listened to me, and you're like, okay, sir, I absolutely will. It's all like Pat Riley with the Miami Heat, right? It's always been reported throughout free agent negotiations or whatever. That's exactly what Riley does. Just follow me, follow my lead, and you will win championships. And I think that's exactly
but
what
But that can agent. Only last for so long, AK.
No, it can last forever. That's the thing with success. And it's not like this is from 2004 with Bill Belichick. Again, we're talking about 3.5 years ago, he was a Super Bowl champion with New England. So, listen, he's had so much success. I don't think this is going to happen. I think we're just spitballing here. And Mac Jones is going to be the quarterback next year. But I think it's something that they should consider. Especially, I think Watson's a perfect fit for them, really. But would Watson
want to go play for a Bill Belichick, is what I'm saying.
I think Watson would be thrilled to get the hell out of Houston and go play for the Patriots. They would instantly become a Super Bowl contender. And I think
when you got a guy like Tom Brady who leaves New England and talks about how much he's enjoying life as a football player and the life that he's living past Bill Belichick, I think a lot of players question whether or not they want to walk into that environment.
I think Brady enjoyed all those rings and Super Bowl appearances quite a bit. I think that's what I would term revisionist history a little bit. The ending wasn't so clean for Belichick and Brady, but the years they had together and all the success.
Oh, 100%. I don't think anybody will ever deny the success they had together was legendary. Absolutely legendary. But times have changed, man. Times have changed.
Maybe they have, or maybe they haven't. That's what to find out next year. Wait to see what the Patriots do in free agency. Another man who's had a ton of success in the NFL is Charlie Batch. He is a two-time Super Bowl champion, a longtime quarterback in the league. We'll get his thoughts on Big Ben, his old running mate at quarterback for Steelers, stepping away for from the NFL after 18 seasons. And we'll get some memories about their time together, and we'll certainly look ahead to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs coming up on Saturday afternoon. It's Korolnik and Koliakovo, the fourth hour First Up, on the way next.